Home cooked bread and astrological ages. When I was 14, I met an amazing astrology teacher named Bonnie Wingo in Lafayette, Colorado, just outside Boulder. And her son and I were schoolmates, and I'd go over there and play. We were both really into Star Wars. We were really inspired by the whole, Star Wars space fantasy epic, So I'd go over to his house and we'd just play for hours. But eventually, I started looking around and I started seeing, all these paintings and pictures that his mom did of little planets, and she had all these charts on the wall. And at first, being raised in the West, and being taught to see astrology as sort of fortune telling, I asked her, "What do you do?" Turn She had a big chart on the wheel with, with a circle with planets on hair clips moving around it. I said, "What do you do? Turn the wheel and just see what happens for the day." She's, "Oh no, that wheel isn't turned. It's glued to the time and place where I was born." the birth horizon. And I was like, "Wow, that's pretty cool." And I started looking at all the little symbols of the planets, and they started to speak to me. And ever since I was like 7, I used to go out under the sky at night and feel like a cosmic sort of reverence for the heavens. And she re at 14, she re reintroduced me to that reverence by, she had decided to look at my chart, and she printed me out on one of these old 1970s astrology computers. I came out as a receipt, and she proceeded to draw the chart up in the old-fashioned way. And next thing you know, she starts looking at me with these eyes, saying, she's 63 at the time, right? She's like, "Kelly," she's like, "you're a born astrologer." She's like, "You have Uranus in the 10th house, grand trine to the sun and moon, and ooh, a moon in Gemini in the 7th house would be great at counseling others with your words. Mercury in Capricorn, a lot of wisdom." And she would just go through and start reading the chart. "Oh, Jupiter, Neptune, and Mars in the 12th house. That's a fascinating understanding of the realm of mythology and visions." And she just went into it, and I was just like, "Whoa, that's totally me. That's totally me." So I started feeling an instant connection with it. And she asked me to start coming to her classes. So I started coming to classes and studying astrology on the weekends. Lee, her son, and I would get together and study astrology. And she would make home cooked bread and service tea, and talk about astrological ages and cycles and go really into the philosophy and behind it all, And she actually did not do charts for a living. She only taught astrology because she faced a lot of religious oppression. She was from Texas, and down there in the Bible Belt, they don't want anybody, in doing any kind of fortune telling, because that's what they perceived astrology was about. See, and so she had a lot of religious oppression growing up. She had studied it for 40 years up to that point, so she'd been into it for a long time, being 63 at the time. So but from her teachings and all, I started imagining the primitive worldview, and what it would be like just to be like, a caveman sitting around notching, notches on a tree, to mark moon cycles and stuff, and realizing it's related to the woman's menstruation cycle, and just being like, "Whoa, it's all connected," And then realizing that nature had these sort of moods, not just four seasons like we perceive it, but actual moods. Every 30 days or so, every moon cycle, you would feel a sort of a shift, a different mood of nature would start. And that was just amazing to me, and I realized that that's where they got the 12 signs. Was these moods of nature, and they would look up and see the stars in the sky and see how the sun would shift during that time. And then they started taking these different feelings, these moods of nature, and mapping them onto the heavens. And so, that gave birth to the study of astrology, the ancient science of star cycles related to human rhythms. When I got to high school, that was about the time I started high school, and they had all kinds of great courses there. They had creative writing and poetry and physics and astronomy, of course, and science, physical science and chemistry. But they also had some, I studied Greek philosophy, Aristotle. I was really a motivated student. I had a 4.0 through high school. And I was in, and they had a class called mythology where I got to study mythology. That was awesome. In 10th grade, I ran into the book, The Tao of Physics. So here I was totally into physics and astronomy and cutting edge hard science. But at the same time, I hadn't been divorced from the ancient sort of spiritual worldview that astrology sort of had given me. And I still saw it as a spiritual universe. And so when the Tao of Physics came out, that was back in 10th grade. I was 14. That's when I had my what the bleep do we know experience. And it happened to me in 10th grade. I was like, whoa. And I started realizing that relativity and physics, you know, quantum physics, what they were saying about reality was not what we were teaching about reality on an everyday level. So I continued my study of calculus and, you know, higher mathematics. And I also got into Japanese. I was president of Japanese club because I loved Japanese as a symbolic language. I loved the characters and the way they put that language together, which is awesome. The only class I did get depressed about was taking U.S. government. But I was an athlete. You know, I did track and football and wrestling and basketball. I tried it all, you know. But football was my thing because I'm a high-energy Aquarian with Sagittarius rising. So I look and act like the horse, the centaur. So, you know, football was perfect for me to kick around. And I actually started trying to introduce astrology and metaphysics and meditation to the football team. And my coach thought I was crazy. You know, he was just like, you know, a German with a little black mustache, looking like Hitler and stuff, but a big guy, you know, a big version of Hitler. And it was his team, and he didn't want me talking about that crap, as he put it. So I started introducing books like, you know, Way of the Peaceful Warrior to him and The Warrior Athlete by Dan Millman. And I started having these enlightenment experiences on the football field, you know, because I would meditate before the game and focus on where all the planets were in the sky. And I would try to give advice. I'd be like, you know, tonight the moon's in an air sign making a trine to, you know, Uranus or whatever, you know. and that means it's a really great night for lots of passing game and trick plays, and it'll really work. And he thought I was nuts. Here was this football player wanting to build pyramids on the sideline, you know, and focus on pyramid power, you know. You know, I actually asked if we could put pyramids on our helmets. That'd be really cool. We were the Centaurus Warriors, and all of our streets around our whole neighborhood were all named after mythological creatures. We had Minotaur Court, Hera Lane, you know, Centaur Village, Sir Lancelot Park. That whole place, that whole neighborhood was all named after, like, you know, King Arthur names. And I lived on Crystal Court by a mystical lake, right off of Zeus Avenue, and Cirrus Drive. Cirrus Drive was right down the street from me. That was just crazy. Every day I walked to school on Cirrus Drive. And later, in my astrology career, I became really interested and fascinated by the asteroid Cirrus. And so, just a little synchronicity there. But so high school was amazing. I actually wrote a screenplay about it called Satori High, which was, I'm still waiting to make it to a movie, but it's about my spiritual high school enlightenment experience. And Satori is the Japanese word for enlightenment. So it was a high that I attained. And so, you know, being a top athlete and 4.0 student, I got a lot of scholarship opportunities. I ended up going to the Air Force Academy for a year, but I couldn't handle the military lifestyle. I just didn't want to be that, you know, regimented, you know. And so I went back and transferred to the University of Colorado to study philosophy and spiritual studies, religious studies. So that was my phase of encountering the universe. So I had home-cooked bread and astrological ages, and then encountering the universe with a capital U. Universe means the turning of the one. And so I thought the university was the best place to go to learn about the universe, right? I was sort of wrong. I mean, I did major in physics and the minor in Japanese, and, you know, I was studying mathematics, differential equations, chemistry, all the different things that an undergraduate would get into. But there were all these mysteries in science, you know, that metaphysics could deal with, but science turned a cold shoulder to, like the dark matter mystery, you know, and you know, scientists say there's dark matter, 90% of the universe is missing mass, so they call it dark matter. But in metaphysics, they call them like astral planes and other dimensions, you know. So I was just like, well, why can't they reconcile, you know? Eventually, wanting to be an astrologer, a professional astrologer, I realized I was sort of in the wrong place. And maybe even in the wrong time, you know. If I'd have been born 100 years from now, or maybe 400 years ago, it would have been okay. Because I hear that astrology was being taught in every major university in Europe in the Renaissance times. And the Arabs nurtured it during its sabbatical, when it got kicked out by the Catholic Church at the turn of the age 2,000 years ago. They didn't really want a worldview that said we were, you know, determined by fate of the stars, you know. So they got to kick that out because it violated their free will concept in the religion. But when I actually learned astrology, I realized that that wasn't true at all. Astrology is totally about that you have free will, but within a pattern, you know, you have a certain traits. I mean, you have a foot. I mean, what are you going to do about it? You know, there's a foot, but, you know, you're stuck with it, right? This is the human form. You can't be a lizard. And so I decided, okay, unless you want to go to Buddhism and become a lizard. But I realized that that was, you know, part of the deal is that we were born with these patternings inside us, this inner psychology, but that we could actually work with it, you know, and have free will in the terms that we could actually realize our potential and kind of become great potential beings. And I started getting to, you know, Abraham Maslow's, you know, theories and stuff. But so at first I tried to just deal with it, you know. Luckily at CU in Boulder, Colorado University, they allowed you to create an individually structured major. So now realizing that the establishment had it out for astrology, because I actually went to try to teach an astrology course in the continuing education area, and they said no. They said we won't allow that. They said if it has to be related to what's being taught in the actual courses at the university. Otherwise, you cannot have it as an independent, you know, as a even a continual education course. I was like, and this is Boulder, Colorado, Enlightened Boulder, Colorado, and they wouldn't even allow an astrology course? This is crazy. So, so you know, I just decided to create my own major and kind of come in the back door, and I called it Dynamics of Consciousness. It was a wonderful blend of Oriental languages and philosophies, poetry and creative writing, mythology, philosophy, religious study, physics, astronomy, chemistry, advanced mathematics. I even broke into some of the graduate level relativity courses, which was always fun. But you know, and I couldn't believe it. The dean actually of the college actually signed off saying, you know, this is a valid major. And I was like, great. And my one of my favorite classes was Jungian psychology with a professor called Mahan. And he was great because he really inspired me. He was a Catholic Buddhist, you know, raised in the Catholic church, but really opened up to the Buddhist teachings too. He taught at Naropa on the side. He was working on a book called Ethics of Ambition when I was there. But he showed me that, you know, you could have both worldviews and in a unified being. I mean, here he was, a Catholic Buddhist, and it was okay with him. In the religious studies department, there was actually a class called Religious Dimensions of Space and Time. And that one really got me going. And then the graduate level relativity course, whew, they had this little professor, little scrawny little professor with white hair. I mean, stark white hair. He looked like he was imported from the 19th century, you know, teaching relativity in there. It's like he had been enlightened, you know, by Einstein and was just like, spent the rest of his life just trying to teach people, you know. Of course, I couldn't understand a lot of the tensor calculus, which is like 20th level math. You got to take 20 years to understand the mathematics that Einstein made up to show his visions, you know. He was a Pisces, a mystic. He said imagination's more important than knowledge, you know. Here's the greatest scientist, you know, the lord of all science. And, you know, here he is talking about how imagination's more important than knowledge. But the one class that really helped me to understand the schism between science and astrology was this class called Pseudoscience and Astronomy. Of course, I rushed to sign up for that one because in it I got to do a debate, and there was a side for astrology and against astrology. Of course, you know which side I was on. And it was interesting because the professor was, you know, really hardcore science guy, and everybody in there was hardcore science majors. And here I am, you know, arguing vehemently and passionately for astrology. And I presented it in such a way that I defeated every single, you know, item that my debate partner came up with, you know. And in the end, I had won the debate, and actually convinced the professor to let me do his chart. So it was pretty good time for me because I learned all the arguments that scientists use against astrology and how to circumnavigate or, you know, get around them, circumvent their arguments. Because they're really lame arguments that show that they have no understanding of the astrological worldview. And it also proves they have no desire to even open up to that and do an experiment, which is what science is supposed to do. Science is to know, you know. And if you want to really know about a subject, you got to study it. And they don't even want to study it, is what I found out. They don't even care to study it. They just want to go based on what they think is the mass consciousness version of astrology, fortune telling based on sun signs in the newspaper. And so that led me to just take a sabbatical from a while. I went on the you know, when you take a year off from college, because really I just got tired of university learning, you know, putting facts in my head and spitting them out on, you know, tests. I liked all my independently structured major classes because I could just do what I wanted and write research papers. And I was working on a thesis, you know, because you had to write a thesis as an undergraduate to get your own, you know, major like that. So, but I wanted to experience life away from home in Boulder. So this phase I call the journey of awakening, or a journey of awakening. And I traveled all over the U.S. with a backpack, all through the Rocky Mountains. I had a big stack of research I had done for my thesis, Dynamics of Consciousness. And I called it a revolution of consciousness, AROC. But I just left it at home, just took a blank journal with me and went traveling all over, you know, went on a journey to Australia. Of course, I went on a journey with a woman who had met in college who also wanted to sort of drop out and go traveling. And I remember when I met her, I had $2 in my pocket. She had $12,000 in the bank. I said, I'll be your guide. Just pay the way. Let's go. So we went on adventures, and we got married and went traveling. And we just fell in love, you know, two college kids, starstruck with each other. And I took my journal to record thoughts. I actually took two journals. I had to send one back. Well, because once I got over the first mountain, this 14,000-foot peak down the Colorado Trail, we both found the nearest post office and shipped a whole box of stuff back home. We couldn't carry all that stuff up mountains. You realize how heavy stuff is when you have to carry it on your back. But so, yeah, for 2 years, we just traveled all over the place. Went to places like Costa Rica, Australia. She was from Key West, her hometown, so we settled back down in Key West. I started to synthesize my old research stack into a book on consciousness. That led to my Key West phase, where I became an astrologer. In this phase, I guess we'll call it smoothies and star lore. Because the first thing that happened, well, actually we got jobs on cruise ships. We were working on the Caribbean in the cruise ships. And this old astrologer lady came on this ship. And, you know, here I am, you know, 21 at the time. And I had been studying astrology since 14. So I had about, you know, 7 years of astrology under my belt. And I went to her lecture and I realized I knew more than her. I realized I had centuries of astrological knowledge stored in my heart and my brain, you know. And what happened was I started answering questions in her class on the cruise ship. You know, she was the guest speaker on the cruise ship. I was like the entertainment host, South Node in Leo, you know. I was down there, you know, playing water polo and basketball. I remember we pulled up to, you know, Barbados or, you know, St. Martin playing basketball with some old guys, you know, out there. And next thing you know, the ball would go flying over the side of the ship, 10 floors down. We had to send a boat out to get our basketball. But so I went to this lecture and I ended up like getting up and teaching what I knew. And she was amazed with my wisdom. She said, you should become an astrologer. I said, I should, shouldn't I? So I went to Key West, and upon landing there, I got a job as a smoothie maker. And I studied, you know, two local astrologers were doing public readings at the time down there. And I would kind of watch over their shoulders, and I realized I had centuries of star lore inside me. And I also realized that astrologers weren't doing a very good job, you know, representing the material. And seeing how they weren't really trying to educate the people they did readings for to get out of this unfortunate mindset of, you know, astrology as fortune-telling and, you know, the mass mind. And they were really into their personas as these mystical figures with star lore, you know. And so kind of disheartened me. But I had a vision while I was there working on the smoothie stand that, you know, my friend, this lady who did tarot cards, she was setting up her little stand, and I looked over and I saw myself sitting there with this table with a big moving zodiac wheel and little planets to move around, and I was doing people's charts. And I heard the voice, you know, that said, talk about three planets in the 12th house, you know, if you build it, they will come, you know. I was like, oh, man, I'm having a Kevin Costner visions here, you know, like Field of Dreams here. Except this time it's a table of dreams on the side of a pier every night where people would come down and watch the sunset celebration. You know, the sun would go down and I'd be out there doing juice and smoothies. Well, I started working on a cart to hook up to the back of my bike, and I spent $300 building this really cool cart with bike wheels and everything, and I built me a table with astrology circle on it and everything, and I just got it all together. And first night I went down there, you know, people were surprised that I wasn't doing smoothies that night. Like, you're an astrologer? I said, yeah, I've been studying this stuff for 9 years. You know, at the time I had a son named Arion Brazenwood. So in addition to my spiritual philosophy astrology book I was working on, I was also working on my fantasy adventure novel that I had written a third of in high school and a third of in college, and I was trying to put the cap on that too. And so Arion was born the day the book was printed out. I printed the book out, and then that I gave it to a writer lady who was gonna, you know, edit it for me. And next thing you know, Arion came into the world about 2.5 hours later. It was pretty crazy. And you should see me in the birthing chamber at the midwife center. I was just like, come on, Tracy, push. That was my wife at the time. I said, come on, push. The sign of Gemini is rising in the east. I said, my moon will be on its ascendant. It'll be great. She's like, shut up about astrology. Shut up about astrology. Anyway, I was pretty excited there. And when Arion came into the world, I had my clock set to the atomic clock. My watch, first time I ever wore a watch, you know, being a freedom lover. Which my chart shows, you know, with all the Aquarius, Sun, and Moon, trine, Uranus. And next thing you know, I was happy to have a little Cancer rising. So, luckily, when I was starting my astrology career, it took off right away. You know, the first night I did 5 readings, and I only charged $12 for a reading. $12, 12 houses, 12 planets, $12 for a little 45-minute readings. And I did 5 of them, and I went home that night, and I was like, wow, I made money for talking about something I love passionately. That was great, you know? And everybody kept saying, you're really good at this. I had a reading by Alan Oaken back in the 70s, and you blew him out of the water, you know? So I was like, okay. They were like, because they tell me to raise my price, you know? So I raised it to 20, and then I ended up raising it to 50, and then people wanted private readings at my house, and next thing you know, that's when I raised it to 50. And actually, I think the first one I charged $25 for. And people were like, you're really good at this. You need to raise your fee. And so I raised it. I said, okay, stop. And I said, okay, I'll raise it to 100. Next 3 clients gave me 100 plus a $20 tip. I was like, man, this is my current calling in life. You know, when you're in your right calling, you know? And because you're so passionate about it too, you know? And luckily, kind of luckily, this guy had a seizure on the side of the pier one night and fell into the water. And that night I happened to be doing juicing, because I was still doing some juicing for my old boss, because I didn't want to leave him hanging, you know. So one night I was doing juicing, and I was about halfway through an orange juice, and this guy had a seizure and fell into the water and was drowning, and people have gotten sucked up under that pier down in Key West and died. So everybody was freaking out, and this one fat guy from North Carolina, I mean the biggest guy on the pier, jumps in to save the guy, right? And then he's drowning because the guy's having a seizure and they're both kind of drowning. And I'm like running around telling my friend, you know, Ray, this big guy like me, he's like, Ray, get the rope out of the kiosk. And I said, hold on a minute, to the lady I was making the orange juice for. And I ran over there and threw the rope to the guy from North Carolina and kind of drug him down the pier. He was holding on to the seizuring guy, trying to this ladder. And then I looked down, I tried to pull him up, and he couldn't get stabilized. And suddenly both of them got sucked under. And I just turned into, like, I have Sagittarius rising with Mars in Sagittarius, kind of like Christopher Reeves. So I had that Superman mentality, and I just, dun-dun-dun-dun, you know, jumped in, you know, dove right in and swam under both of them, caught both of them real hard, and started climbing the ladder, and then climbed the ladder, and then basically, you know, told the big guy from North Carolina to start climbing, and then I just grabbed the Caesar guy and kind of manhandled him because he was all over the place crazy, and then told him, and then just kind of lifted him up over my head and just hoped that my friend Ray would be able to, like, grab him. And then, like, finally I felt his weight lift, and I was like, oh. So after we got him out, it was crazy, you know. And then I went running back over to my juice stand, sopping wet, and cut an orange in half and squeezed the other half into the cup and filled her cup up and said, that'll be $2.50 plus tip for entertainment. So luckily the next night, though, the newspaper came down to take pictures of me for saving this guy's life, and he actually came too and shook my hands and said, thanks for saving me. And he was in the hospital all night. But anyway, I was on the front page of the paper, The Astrologer Who Saves Lives, you know, and I was like, whoa, I think I made $36,000 that year. So it was pretty good. But so yeah, my career blossomed as an astrologer. I self-published. I sent my book, Celestial Renaissance, I called it, because I realized I needed to, it's and I, instead of a revolution of consciousness, which is my original title from college, I called it a revolution of astrology. Because I really wanted to put astrology in the title for marketing purposes, but for mainly because I really wanted to honor the art that I wanted to stand for, and the celestial, as I saw it, we needed sort of a rebirth. The Renaissance means rebirth. That's why I called the book Celestial Renaissance. And so yeah, out on that pier, of course, every night it would be crazy because at first you would feel kind of a lot of oppression from people walking by you. The religious fanatics would go by and they would be like, looking at you like, "Ooh, you're of the devil," and then the scientists would go by, the occasional scientists, or rationalist, mechanical, left brain universe person would go by and think like, "How could you even believe in that stuff?" And one night I encountered a scientist who was open to at least talking, right? And he pretty much came up and launched his attack, saying, astrology, it's such a old superstition, It was kind of like, I felt like someone out of Star Wars, when they talk about the Force, like, "You believe in that old superstition?" And of course, I gave my rebuttal, that astrology to me was a language and a poetry of celestial motions and cycles that are related to human cycles. And I was like, why would you want to stamp that out with these arguments you're presenting?" And he basically said it presents a false worldview, not based on the facts of science. And I thought, well, I said, couldn't the facts of science be wrong? I mean, science itself has evolved and changed, and it actually grew out of astrology. It was one of the first sciences. Actually, the first science was humans looking up at the sky going, "Whoa, where the hell are we? Let's notch some notches on trees and count moon cycles." And science is still no closer today to writing equations of why we're alive, the meaning of life, or to explain, the mysteries of feeling and thought and these interactions we have inside us, which, in the metaphysics and the spiritual department, we call soul, the science of the soul. We can't write equations for soul yet. And so, he responded with, "Of course, science is based on measurement and experimentation, and that psychology was the branch of science that studies people's insides, that, consciousness." But I argued that psychology has been reduced to, just labeling people with all these strange names, like ADD and schizophrenic, and I was like, "But where's the ology of the soul, the psyche?" My position is that astrology is the oldest and most fruitful and detailed system of archetypal psychology available, a true ology of the psyche, the soul. He just said that science didn't deal with terms of soul or spirit, and I was like, "Well, what if I want a science, a knowing that deals with human existence and observation, like where quantum physics is and quantum mechanics is leading to anyway, the science of how the observer affects the experiment." And the debate went back and forth, and he brought up a lot of astronomical reasons why astrology was off, and I was like, "Well, you mean if we corrected those, you would totally be into astrology?" And he was like, "No." He's like, "Astrology's invalid," he kept saying. He even, brought up stupid arguments like, "Why do you use four elements when chemistry has shown there's over 100, Why is the Earth at the center, geocentric, when we've proven it's a heliocentric solar system, The precession of the equinoxes has shifted the zodiac over 20, 24, 25 degrees. Why are you still using a zodiac based on the equinoxes and or I mean not on the on the equinoxes and solstices when you're not even aligned with your own star group constellations?" So, his arguments show that he knew nothing about astrology. I was like, "Have you even ever studied astrology and learned its workings? Because what you're saying is showing you don't really know much." And I was like, "Do you even know how to calculate a birth chart and interpret its symbolic language, like the basics of interpretation, like putting a planet and a sign in a house?" And the answer was unanimously no, and he didn't want to. Well, then I just told him, you know, you really have no platform to stand upon. You could stand there all day and give astronomical findings that have proven astrology invalid, like the precession, the equinox that you just quoted. But if you don't understand the how astrologers utilize these things in their practice, then you're actually doing bad science. This is arrogance at its height. You know, my creed is better than your creed. Schoolyard children can do that. So I said, let's have an adult conversation, okay? That's where I wanted to take it. I was just like, you know, when you actually assume that my position has value, at least for me, right? And let's try to understand each other, right? I've done my part. I can do physics, chemistry, even advanced mathematics. But you don't even know how to interpret a planet in a sign or a house, or an aspect for that matter, which draws on basic geometry. So let's start by acknowledging that you've been conditioned by your culture to think only in the terms of science. You know, I've talked with dogmatic religious folk too. I told the guy, and they've been conditioned by their institutions as well. They don't want to hear about astrology. Even though when I studied biblical Hebrew and Greek and researched every biblical passage with a reference to the heavens, the stars, the zodiac, etc., I found that you couldn't even understand the whole Bible unless you knew some basic astrology, which their worldview was surrounded by 2,500 years ago. So the only real thing to do, I told him, was for you to actually go learn to use astrology and see if it works. I mean, do a science experiment. We can't explain magnetism, electricity, gravitation at all. But, we can write equations for what happens based on these forces. But they're kind of invisible forces that we can't, you know, really measure on a practical level. Like we don't know why they happen. But we just know that they work out here in the real world. I mean, there's an electrical current. There's gravity, you know. Couldn't there be something going on inside of us, you know, that's equally mysterious as these three, you know, magnetism, electricity, gravitational, maybe archetypal field theory? So I told him, I said, basically, to give real astrology a chance, like not newspaper astrology, so that you can fudge the results. This isn't about, you know, okay, let's see if all Cancer sun sign people are sensitive, compassionate, caring beings who love to cook and worry a lot. Because in real astrology, you might have the sun in Cancer, but have five other planets in the sign of Aries, the archetypal sign of the warrior, the leader, the daredevil. And that cancels out and modifies all the Cancerian empathy. So you have to do a true experiment to actually see if astrology works. You know yourself. You can just do your own chart and apply. Go learn about the basic terms of astrology. It'll take you less than a week, you know, with a scientific brain that you have to learn the terms and put them into practice. But, you know, I got a lot of resistance from him, you know, and a lot of attitude about, you know, basically that showed me that his attitude was that science was above astrology and it didn't need it, you know. So there's a lot of ego in science about, and resistance about metaphysics and what they've even came up with a term for it, pseudoscience. And in other words, fake science, they call it. It's funny how life changes, but, you know, so... For them, astrology has to prove itself to science, not the reverse. They don't want to learn astrology. You know, for them, it's obviously based on superstition. How can Jupiter, you know, have an effect on my psychology when it's millions of miles away? You know, they'll give, you know, examples like the microwave has more energy effect on me than Jupiter based on its distance. You know, and I argue that in the plane of consciousness, observation is the key, not distance. It's what you see that counts, and what you experience within. You know, what kind of, you know, like you can have a near death car experience, or even see a near death car experience, and it will shake you up psychologically, right? And you're like, whoa, or like an intense movie, you know. So, okay, I said, so you don't want to go learn astrology, but you still refused to validate my interest and passion for it as a language, an art, and a sacred science. So yeah, he agreed. He said, I can't stand the stuff, but you refuse to investigate its actual principles? He's like, yes. Then we have no grounds for a debate. It's like you're saying, I want to debate with you, but I'm not going to learn anything about you. I'm just going to sit there and say no to everything you say. I was like, that's not an adult conversation, you know? To me, I think that, the reason I got out of science and went back into astrology as a poetic language of human cycles is because I realized that science is always trying to eliminate the consciousness from life, from the equation. And consciousness simply refuses to be eliminated from the equation. And they're finding that in their own experimentations now. But, I said, what if I asked you to indulge me a little? Let's say I thought it was neat that the moon cycle sort of rhymes with the woman's menstruation cycle. And then I thought it was sort of neat that the 12-year sunspot cycle and Jupiter cycle rhymes with sort of orientations in mass consciousness, and the rise and falls of Republicans and Democrats. And that the Saturn cycle with, Saturn being about maturity and mythology, the wise old man, sort of rhymes with our little 7-year maturity cycles and our rite of passage into the 30s and into the 60s. I was like, what if I just thought that was fascinating, and I just wanted to do art because of it, and I just wanted to be inspired to write a poem about it, or many poems about it, or a grand poem about it. Would you accept that as, astrology as an art, or as a poetry, as a metaphor? And he was like, yes, that could be great. That could be great. So, you're cool with astrology as a source of creative inspiration. He's like, well, and what if I took that to the extreme? What if I mapped out all the variables and combinations of meaning and myth and mythology and metaphor, bring it all together? Like Pluto being the planet on the edge of deep space, and in mythology it's the lord of the underworld, the lord of the darkness. Or Uranus being about unpredictability and being weird and being zany and electric and shocking, and it happens to be wobbling around the solar system on its side with its north pole facing the sun, being the weird planet, right? What if I mapped out all of these possibilities and variables and all the metaphors, right, as they relate to human life? And what if it turns out that they actually work in human life? Then would you be cool with astrology? And, of course, I got a lot of derision about that. No, the big answer, no. I refuse to learn astrology for the sake of a simple debate. I refuse to acknowledge that it works even in some poetic, metaphorical, artistic sense, even if there are minor correlations. The solar system and its planets do not have effects on consciousness. Well, then, sadly, I guess our conversation is done, I said. It's a shame because both of our interests, astrology and science, have a lot to offer each other. Well, the sun was setting over Key West, and all heads suddenly turned to watch its glorious descent into the ocean, the dramatic ending of the day. Performers stopped performing. Crafts folks got out from behind their stands to stretch and to kind of watch the sun, honor the sun's moment, right? The star of our solar system. And even I stood up next to the scientist to watch this glorious event. And I said, that celestial body is sure having an effect on human consciousness right now. He glanced around the pier and saw that every face was trained on the sun. It certainly is, he said, smiling. It certainly is.